Welcome to the Quill Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quill Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dowell, and we're reading my work in progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quill Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 22. Edwina had offered to accompany her, but Bess decided that for her first visit she should go by herself. Yes, it was possible that Mrs. Semple would resent some strange woman coming into her house to give her advice on how to run it. But how would Bess learn how to best counter that resentment if she used Edwina as a crutch? She hoped that Mr. Semple wouldn't be at home, although given that he was out of work, it was quite possible that he would be. Men were thornier than women about receiving any kind of charity. Bess had seen that as a child, making rounds with her mother. Women would accept most things with grace if it made their children's lives better, but men had their pride to protect, it seemed. This wasn't charity, Bess reminded herself as she checked the address on the card Joe had given her that morning. It was helping people help themselves. St. Luke's Family Aid Program would begin by serving three families, with the hope that these families might help other families in return. Joe felt that everyone, no matter their circumstances, had something to give, and most people like to be helpful to others. The Semples, Bess knew, had three children under the age of 10, all of them girls. What she was going to suggest to Mrs. Semple is that they begin work on new dresses for when the girls return to school in the fall. Victoria Owens, who was one of the five women serving on the Family Aid Committee, had visited Mrs. Semple the week before and ascertained that the woman had basic sewing skills but no money for material, no sewing machine, and not much time for dressmaking. Bess carried a satchel with fabric and thread she'd gotten at Larry's sewing shop the day before, purchased with money from last week's collection plate. She'd also bought a McCall's pattern for a girl's dress with a simple neckline and a plain skirt, perfect for the beginning seamstress. The pattern came in three sizes and could be made with long or short sleeves. Maybe when she got to know Mrs. Semple, the two women could go to Leary's and choose fabrics and the patterns together. But for this first venture, Bess felt it best to keep the variables to a minimum. The fabric she picked had a lively print that any little girl would love, and even if it wouldn't have been Mrs. Semple's first pick, certainly the woman would recognize its charms. As the mother of three girls, Bess felt herself a bit of an expert in this area, but she pressed two other women in the sewing shop for their opinions. They agreed with her that the fabric was darling. After her shopping trip, Bess had stopped by Victoria's to hear more about the Semples. Victoria lived a few doors away from Emmeline, but unlike the Grangerfields, the Owens had not come through the market crash unscathed. They'd managed to hold on to their elegant colonial revival-style home, but just barely. This according to Mary Pressler, who'd whispered it to Bess sotto voce one day in the church office. The garden out front still bore hints of its former grandness, but the rose bushes were in need of tending, and the overburdened hydrangeas leaned over as though trying to get a better look at the grass. The house itself wore a wary expression. It had clearly been too many years since its facade had been refreshed with a good coat of paint, and the roof was beginning to shed its shingles. Interestingly, her financial dire straits didn't seem to have much effect on Victoria's bearing or personality. For as long as Bess had known her, she'd always been a friendly, athletic woman who talked a bit too much about her tennis game. The two women had never socialized. They ran in different circles. According to Florence, Victoria was the first person you went to when you needed someone to run a charity ball or raise money for hungry children overseas. Or at least she had been, before her family lost most of its fortune. Funny, Bess had thought when she sat across the table from Victoria, drinking tea. Even though the woman was nearly penniless, she couldn't shake off the habit of charity. Victoria was eager to report on her visit to the Semples the week before and thoughtful in her opinions. "What Fanny Semple needs most of all is an extra pair of hands," she told Bess. "She's the most frugal woman you'll ever meet and can fashion feasts out of bread crusts. Why, she served me an apple pie made out of crackers and no apples. Her husband tends a fairly extensive vegetable garden, and they keep chickens, though they could use a few more. If you can teach Fanny to sew and we can keep her supplied with enough fabric, why, she'll have the whole family decked out with a new wardrobe in no time. I dropped off my machine yesterday. I never really took to sewing myself." Bess parked her car in front of the Semples' small house, which was only a few streets away from the mills. The front yard resembled nothing so much as a miniature farm, with neat rows of plants running from one end to the other. Bess recognized corn and tomato and beans among all the leafy foliage. Glancing around, she saw that most of the yards were laid out in the same way and thought how much Jane, a lifelong plant enthusiast, would feel at home here. She'd barely made it 3 feet up the front walk when the door opened and a woman stepped out onto the porch. "Hello," the woman called. "Are you Mrs. Wilcox? Can I carry anything for you?" "No, thank you," Bess replied. "Are you Mrs. Semple?" "I'm Molly," the woman said in a straightforward manner that Bess took as a good sign. "I wish you'd call me that." "Well then, please call me Bess. You have a beautiful garden, Molly." Molly took a step off the porch. "It's my husband Morris who planted it and keeps it up. I used to have a real nice rose bush out there, but roses won't keep the kids fed." "I like roses, but these plants are beautiful too," Bess said as she reached the young woman. She offered her hand and Molly took it. "Do you can?" Molly nodded. "I took a class last spring on how to do it. My folks didn't grow much of a garden when I was a girl, so I didn't learn to preserve growing up. Funny thing is that Morris did. But he wanted me to take that class instead of him teaching me how. He thought maybe they'd come up with some new ways of doing it. Safer ways." "Food science is always advancing," Bess said, sounding to herself like an ad for mason jars. "Is Mr. Semple home today?" "He found a day job, it looks like. Every morning at 7:30, he goes to the corner of George and 6th and sees if anyone's hiring for the day. If he's not home by 9, that means he got work. Usually it's construction." Mrs. Semple waved toward the porch. "Would you like a cup of coffee before we start?" Bess followed the young woman into the house. "Yes, I'd love one, thank you." Molly led Bess down a narrow hallway into a small but bright kitchen. "My sister took the girls for the morning. She's got 3 girls herself, and they all play pretty good together." Pouring coffee into 2 pretty, if slightly chipped, cups, Molly asked, "Is this the only time you'll visit?" "I'd like to come once a week for the next month or so, if that's all right with you," Bess said as Molly placed a cup on the table in front of her. "I can work with you on the dresses for the girls. Later on in the summer, I can help you can if you'd like." Molly looked at her, a doubtful expression on her face. "You know how to can? You don't look the type." "My grandmother had a small vegetable garden, and I helped her can tomatoes and corn. She called it putting up the preserves, something like that. She said it was like putting summer in a jar." "That's nice," Molly said, taking a seat across from Bess. "She sounds like a poet." "I think she was in her way," Bess agreed. "She liked reading poetry, I remember that. Most of it was awful, but every once in a while she'd pull out a gem, Keats or Wordsworth. "My father always liked poetry," Molly said. "He liked to scandalize my mother by reading Walt Whitman. She'd chase him out of the kitchen with a broom, and we'd all laugh until we fell out of our chairs." "You and your sister?" Molly nodded. "Plus another sister and four brothers. Oh, we had a time growing up. I'd like to have four more myself, but we can hardly afford the ones we've got." "How about you, Mrs. Wilcox? How many children were in your family growing up?" "It was just me, I'm afraid," Bess said, and Molly shook her head as though this were the saddest thing she'd ever heard. "Oh, it wasn't too awful. It was unusual, that was for certain. My mother, you see." Bess could feel her cheeks redden. This conversation certainly was getting personal. But she supposed it a good thing. If she and Molly were comfortable with one another, honest with one another, presumably they would work together better. She took a breath and continued. "My mother had a difficult time giving birth to me, and afterwards, well..." "I understand," Molly said, as though she sensed Bess's discomfort in talking about such an intimate matter. "I'm just glad she survived it, and you too. So many women and babies don't." Bess thought of Elise, who also had had a difficult time of it. Was that why it had taken her so long to warm up to darling little Jean? She still didn't seem quite her old self, though clearly she was much better than she had been. According to Florence, moving into the new house had done Elise a world of good. "I think it's given her hope that one day she'll be right as rain again," Florence had said at last Wednesday's Bee, which Elise hadn't attended. "She's working on a quilt for the baby's crib. Not that Jean doesn't have half a dozen quilts, thanks to us. Which I think is a hopeful sign, don't you?" They all did. And they all listened intently as Florence and Eula described the new house. "We should go for a visit after the Bee," Emmeline suggested. "We could take her the leftover pie, if there is any leftover pie." Florence had work to do, and Eula needed to prepare for a new sewing class that evening, so it was Bess, Edwina, and Emmeline who drove out to the farm that afternoon. Bess drove while Emmeline peppered Edwina about her recent outings with Bonaparte fellows. "I actually got him to come to church with me last Sunday," Edwina reported, laughing. "He's really quite the heathen. But he did seem to enjoy the sermon and the music." "And the hats," Bess had added. "He had so much to say about the hats during coffee hour." "Humorous things?" Emmeline wanted to know. "No, though some of what he said was funny. It was more about the art of hat making. He notices the tiniest details, doesn't he, Edwina?" Edwina nodded. "It's what makes him such an interesting companion." "It's so good to have someone to talk to, isn't it?" Emmeline said. "I mean, someone who's so interesting and engaging." It struck Bess that Emmeline had an unusual level of enthusiasm when it came to Edwina and Beau spending time together. Perhaps it was because it was she who had introduced the two. It was always nice when you brought people together in the hopes that they would become friends, and they actually did. The nice thing was, having introduced Edwina to Beau, Emmeline seemed fonder of the older woman than she'd once been. For a time, it seemed that every time Edwina spoke, Emmeline felt the need to offer a contrary opinion. These days, she seemed more likely to agree than to protest. It was a welcome change, but Bess couldn't quite shake the feeling that something was running beneath Emmeline's newfound affection, something suspicious. Elise had been sitting on the porch of the new house when they arrived, the baby in her arms. She stood and greeted her visitors with a friendly wave. "Let me show you around," she called as they came up the front walk. Florence was right. The new house had called forth some of Elise's old optimism. As she walked them through the small house, it was the Collingwood model, she informed them. Elise talked about the wallpaper she hoped to put up in the living room and the rag rug she was going to make for the baby's room just as soon as she got a minute. Hopeful signs, as Florence had put it. Bess couldn't help but think of when she and Bill bought their house on Arthur Street. How fun it had been to walk through its empty rooms and imagine how they would fill them, to dream about the family they would have one day. She felt a sudden pang of regret that she wouldn't have that experience with Joe. But maybe they could. No, that was ridiculous. It was one thing for Florence to ponder moving to a new house. Florence was shedding her old skin, trying to see herself in a new light. Bess didn't want to move on from her old life. She wanted to expand it to include new things, new friendships, a new marriage. And still, as Elise showed them what she'd done in the kitchen and the living room, dreaming out loud of the things she wanted to do in the coming year, Bess couldn't help feeling that it would be a wonderful thing to start over in a new house, to walk through empty rooms with Joe and make plans for the many ways they could fill them up. "I've set up the sewing machine in my bedroom," Mrs. Semple told Bess as she rinsed their coffee cups in the sink. "It's like getting a new piece of furniture. Morris don't mind. He loves machines of all sorts. He was so frustrated that he couldn't fix my old sewing machine. I had to make him swear he wouldn't take this one apart just to see how it works." The bedroom was small, with most of the space taken up by two narrow beds that had been pushed together on one side of the room, perhaps to make space for the dresser on the other side, or perhaps, well, Bess thought it none of her business why the beds might be pushed together. It felt odd to be in a stranger's bedroom, especially when Bess had never been inside the bedrooms of her closest friends. She decided to act as though it were the most normal thing in the world. "That dresser is lovely," she said. "Is it maple?" Molly nodded. "Morris made it for me." "Your husband is a man of many talents." "Yes, he is," Molly said, sounding pleased. "Between you and me, I bet he'll take to sewing on this machine faster than I do. I wish I'd learned when I was little, but my mother never got around to teaching me. My sister sewed, and they showed me how. I know how to sew a little bit, but I want to get better." "It takes some practice at first, but you'll catch on quickly," Bess assured her. "Let's start by cutting out the pattern. Where can we do that?" "Dining room table," Molly said. "I've got scissors that are nice and sharp." "Did Morris sharpen them for you?" Molly smiled. "Like you said, he's a man of many talents." This was one husband Bess would really like to meet. The Semple seemed like a family determined to work hard in order to get through hard times. How fortunate for them that Morris had so many of the skills that would help them do just that, and that Molly was eager to learn. It didn't feel like charity when you were helping people help themselves, Bess thought as she followed Molly down the hallway. She felt a slight tinge of guilt, thinking about all the people who did need charity, people who couldn't help themselves. Perhaps it was those people she should be serving, not the capable Semples. Well, as Bill would say, one step at a time. "So what does your husband do, Mrs. Wilcox?" Molly asked as she showed her into the small dining room. "I hope he's been able to hold on to his job, whatever it is." Bess opened her mouth to reply, but suddenly realized she was about to give the wrong answer. She was about to say, "My late husband was an engineer." But the man she was married to now was a minister. And Bess's last name wasn't Wilcox. It was Mayfield. Her name was Bess Mayfield. It was time, Bess knew, to break the news to everyone, including herself. Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.